Welcome in. What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 219. We got a ton to do today. And listen, I have not talked much about my trip to Japan. I don't know. There's conflicting opinions on these podcasts. You know, I should dive into that at some level. And Demonze, I think, needs some help with his headphones, guys. So I'll talk about this for a second. But some people would say, hey, people are opting to spend their time with you. They want to know about your life. Other people are like, nah, we're here to hear about sports. So I didn't really get into the details of it. But what I will tell you is this. I had no jet lag the entire time I was in Japan. And I was like, man, this jet lag stuff everyone's always whining about is a bunch of nonsense. Since I got back from Japan, I have gotten up for the day at 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m., 4 a.m., and today, 1:30 in the morning, and just can't go back. I've been up since 1:30 in the morning today. And I just can't get back on like a regular schedule. So this is literally cup of coffee number 7. It's 10:30 in the morning. And I know it sounds like, Nick, if you're trying to go back to sleep, why are you drinking coffee? Once I realize I can't go back to sleep, I'm still tired. It doesn't matter. So that's what my week has been like. I'm going to force myself to stay up late one of these days, try to get back on schedule. So the jet lag didn't hit me in Japan. It is hitting me here in the States. But we have a ton to do today. Here's what we are not doing on the show today. Mike Tyson's going to fight Jake Paul. That's the dumbest thing ever. George Brett wants a Kauffman Stadium urinal. George Brett's kind of an odd dude, I'll be honest with you. And Joey Chestnut wins a pierogi eating contest. I think the producers think I have far more interest in Joey Chestnut than I actually do, because a year and a half ago I gave an all-time great public defender for Joey Chestnut. It was one of my more brilliant moments on the pod, but I don't really give a damn about Joey Chestnut, and he was mean to my friend DA when he had him in studio years ago, so I actually don't even really like that fella. But I just, you know, the public defender, you have to defend who after you defend. Demonze, how are you?
I'm doing good. Doing great.
Have you waded into any of the internet discussion that I spurred with our semi-viral 10-minute clip about the LeBron Jordan stuff?
Yeah, so I've seen much less serious arguments on it, but yes, I definitely see it.
So if I may for a moment, so our pal Bomani Jones sent out this tweet this morning, and it was pretty good. He writes, I'll hand it to my buddy Nick. He gets y'all to still engage that GOAT debate. All his logic and theory works except for one thing. We were there. We saw it. We were there in 91. We were there in 96. And this is the big one. We were there in 2010 and 2011. It's over. And then he writes, and yes, I turned off replies, because if I don't want to hear what my intelligent good friend has to say about this, I sure as bleep don't want to hear what you guys think about it. And then Bomani argued with people about it for an hour, because no matter how much you say you don't want to engage in the GOAT debate, you just can't help yourself. And here's what I'll say, because we have a lot of stuff to get into. The Lakers lost last night. The Warriors blew out the Bucks. The Bills are falling apart at the seams. All of that. But I want to revisit just for a moment. Demonze, here's the thing, man. I won the argument. And you know why I won the argument? Because I once again have forced people to unknowingly concede ground to me. This has been a multi-year effort. And I don't do it that often, but every time I engage, I attack a very specific flank of the Jordan Zealots army, and I weaken it enough to where they have to send troops that way, which weakens the overall front that they have built up over 25 years. So this time I said, you know what? Everybody just concedes the whole peak argument. So I am going to like a surgeon, attack with precision that. And so the entirety of this week, people have not actually been debating who's the GOAT. They've only been debating who had the higher peak.
Yeah.
Which, the reason I say I won, is because now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, anytime, is anyone going to be able to say, Jordan had the higher peak, it's not debatable. Yeah, it f***ing is. You guys spent a lot of time debating it. It's by definition debatable because you're debating it. So that's debatable. You know what we didn't talk anything about? Longevity. Because that is, by the definition, not debatable. So now the whole idea, one of their last bastions of, you know, unencroached upon ground, one of their last fronts that they could just, you know, have a few centuries out. They didn't have to worry about. They didn't have to spend a lot of resources on. They have spent all week. Oh, they've been calling in resources. Send the memes.
I haven't seen a lot of talk about longevity. I guess that argument doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Like
no, they don't. None of it. And you know what? You certainly haven't heard a lot of talk about 2011. Haven't heard a lot of talk about swept in the fun. No, because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about peaks. And you want to say it's not a debate, but you've spent 3 days debating it. So it is a debate. If I came on this show and I said, you know what? I want to talk Mahomes v. Brady. And I think Mahomes is the better winner. Just the better winner. Guess what? It wouldn't cause 3 days of debate because that's not debatable at the moment. No, Brady's won 7 Super Bowls. He beat him head-to-head in the playoffs. It's not debatable. But I said, let's talk peak, something you guys say is not debatable, and now you've spent all week debating it. By definition, that is now debatable, so take that little piece of argument out of your arsenal, add it to mine, and you look at the scales, and all of a sudden, you're like, Jesus Christ, man, we're getting outflanked all over the place. So the Overton window has moved once again on the LeBron-Jordan debate, thanks to yours truly, and the number of people who are angriest about this that have, you know, either some type of, whenever you see the people angriest about the argument, a nice fun thing you can do on Twitter is go to their profile and click media and see how many tweets you have to scroll down before you see a photoshopped LeBron James crying tweet or some infographic with wildly incorrect information. And you know, people are getting nervous. And so, yeah. So my work here's done. You know, in 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, we might re-engage once again. And so I feel great about it. Now to today's show. Demonte, what are we starting with?
I'm glad you're feeling great about it, Pops. Thank you. So we were originally going to talk about NBA I hear myself in here. We're going to talk about an NBA Finals preview and Nuggets Celtics tonight, but you wanted to clear that out to talk about Buffalo clearing cap space. So they just cleared.
I did.
They cleared $35 million in cap space by cutting a bunch of players and 3 of their starters and one of their safeties, Jordan Poyer. Do you think the Bills are throwing in the towel, or do you think they're getting ready to make a big move?
No, there's no big move they can make. What they're doing is they are paying the bill that has come due. And folks can say all they want. And people think I want to talk about this because I want to take shots at Buffalo. That's not actually it. That's just an added bonus. I want to talk about this because my colleagues in the media have done a poor job, not all but some, on explaining what the salary cap is. And folks think it's fake. Folks think, oh, you can always move money around. You can always, you know, restructure. And that is true to a degree. But eventually, all of these bills come due. No pun intended. Every single dollar, that is paid to a football player by the team at some point shows up on some year's cap table. And because of that, the Buffalo Bills had to move on from both of their safeties, Tre'Davious White, They had to move on from players they would otherwise like to keep because they got a little overzealous a couple years ago and signed Von Miller to an absurd contract. Because they said, you know what, screw it, we're going all in, we're going for it right now. And what they have to show for it is nothing. What they have to show for it is some really exciting playoff losses. That's it. And you, the Denver Broncos, you know what, now's our chance. We're going to go get Russell Wilson. We're going to make a significant move. We're going to sign Randy Gregory. We're going to sign Frank Clark. We're going to do all these things. Oh, shit. Justin Simmons, the second best player on our team in the prime of his career, three straight all pros. We have to cut you because that bill came due. And so there is, whenever you see a team go, you know, start, whenever you see a team and make a signing, and you say, oh my God, how do they have the money for that? And then you turn on TV and they're like, man, GMX at it again. He's a real cap magician. What that means is he's borrowing from future years. And that can work. The Bucks did it when Brady was there. They won a championship. The Rams did it right when they got Stafford. They won a championship. They then had some lean times while they cleaned it up. The problem is if you do it and don't win a championship, the next year, you don't want to admit, we didn't quite get it. All right, let's borrow from another. We were borrowing from next year. Now let's borrow more from 2 years down the road. And eventually, it's like, guys, we have to be cap compliant. By March 13th, we are $40 million over without adding our draft class, without adding free agents. What do we do? And the answer is cut players you'd otherwise like to keep. And that's a tough spot to be in if you got nothing to show for it. As an added bonus, and this is what, with respect to the producers, they didn't understand was the real, this is where it is about Buffalo. The real reason seeing the name Tre'Davious White was cut from the Bills really got my heart palpitating is, you know how the Chiefs had the 27th pick and they saw Patrick Mahomes and they desperately wanted him, and so they traded that pick to Buffalo along with another first-round pick, another draft capital to go get Patrick Mahomes in what is the greatest trade in NFL history. And the flip side, you know, kind of the worst trade in NFL history for Buffalo because they had Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback and Nathan Peterman, and they didn't want to draft Patrick Mahomes. The blue-chip player the Bills got in that trade. Any guesses who it was? Tre'Davious White. Yeah. They got four players that they drafted with those picks the Chiefs traded to them. Tre'Davious White was the last remaining Bill, and now he's gone. And so, in a trade, 7 years ago on draft day.
Probably good to get that out of the room, you know? They can finally start fresh.
Yeah, maybe.
None of that burden.
Yeah, start fresh. Okay, you know, that is a kind way to look at it. Another way to look at it is this. 7 years ago, the Chiefs and the Bills made a trade. Since they made that trade, the Chiefs have won 3 Super Bowls, been to 4, beaten the Bills in the playoffs 3 times. The Bills have done nothing. What the Chiefs have left from that trade is the most talented player in NFL history. And what the Bills have left from that trade is $16 million of dead cap space. I'm not saying it's the Babe Ruth trade because at least the Red Sox got the money to, you know, put on that Broadway show that the owner was trying to put on. It's a little worse. All right, what's next? That is true. Look it up, DeMonte. Traded Babe Ruth because the owner wanted to put on a play. Needed some cash. Traded him to the Yankees. Yeah, look it up. A true story.
That's hilarious. All right, what's next? Answers that. Go ahead. You put the Lakers yesterday on the show in the terrifying for a series or two category, which means that they're basically cooked. In Cleveland and Miami, LeBron always knew the best time to leave. With the Lakers, it kind of seems like he's trying to stick it out. Do you think it'd be better if they just lost to make it easier for LeBron, or would like winning kind of confuse him and make him stay? What do you think LeBron should do?
I got you. So I know what I want him to do, and I think I know what he's going to do. But before I do that, let me go micro for a moment, because late last night, the Lakers lost once again to the Sacramento Kings. Truly baffling performance by all parties, except for, of course, LeBron, who had 31 points, 13 assists on 10 of 16 from the field. He was excellent, but AD does not do well with these European centers. Sabonis, I think, is 9—DeMontis Sabonis, I think, is 9-0 in his career against Anthony Davis. You guys can fact-check me on that. I believe that to be true, and the Lakers have lost 9 straight to Jokic. These, you know, burlier, more physical, but also great passing centers. And it's maybe it's one of the reasons AD traditionally didn't want to play center. The Lakers, of course, don't have an actual backup center on the roster, NBA caliber. I don't care what you say Jackson Hayes is. So that's a problem. Also, if you watched the Lakers-Kings game last night, which last night I did not watch because, as I said, I had this wild jet lag. I fell asleep at 9 o'clock last night, but luckily, when you wake up at 1:30 in the morning, yeah, I got plenty of time today to rewatch it this morning. What you saw was the Lakers got out to a great start. And this is a really important game because they're trying to catch the Kings. And the Kings are now 3-0 against them this year. So if they finish with the same record, the Kings will have tiebreakers. This is a bad loss. Lakers got out to a great start. The starters were cooking the Kings for the first 6 minutes of the game. They were up 17 points early. The starters started and played the first 6 minutes or so together. That lineup, the starting five, the rest of the game, played 0 minutes together. I mean, listen, sometimes Darvin Ham gets over-criticized. And sometimes, man, a week ago, Cam Reddish was in your closing lineup against Denver. Yesterday, D&B coach's decision. I mean, it is some tough sledding with some of these Darvin Ham coaching decisions. And so all of that, you know, is what the Lakers are. LeBron is still great. AD, he's had trouble against the Kings and the Nuggets, but he's been excellent this year. Way too much Taurean Prince in the Lakers diet, in my opinion, but what are you going to do? So, to get to your question, and the producers confirmed it, Sabonis 9-0 against Anthony Davis. It's not great. LeBron's not going to leave. It bums me out. I wish he would. I don't think Bronny is going to go to the pros next year. And that the Bronny stuff is a whole different discussion, but I don't really want to have it right now. I think Bronny's going to go back to USC. I think LeBron wants to be there. I think his wife loves L.A. I think his businesses love L.A. I think his family loves L.A. Bryce is playing high school ball. I don't think he wants to leave.
How much more of the GOAT debate does it silence if LeBron wins one more ring?
Well, do you think here's the thing. I think there are many people that are entrenched and will just say, okay, so now he's at 6, he's at 5, but Michael's at 6. Obviously, it would help, but I don't think, I I think it is going to be very, very difficult. LeBron right now is, at best, the fifth best player in the league, and at worst, the 10th best player in the league. That sounds great. That guy doesn't typically win the title as a team's best player. That's Jason Tatum's hurdle. Jason Tatum is, at best, the fifth best player in the league, and at worst, the eighth best player in the league. It sounds great, except for when you realize usually the title goes to one of the three best players in the league. Just go down the list of champions over everyone's lifetime ever, and you can find, like, three instances in the last, honestly, 40 years where that wasn't the case. So it's just... So the reason I say that is, if LeBron were to win a title as the second best guy on someone else's team, I don't think it probably moves the GOAT debate that much. Hell, folks, he won a title in resounding fashion as the best player on his own team, and folks said that one didn't count because it was in Orlando at Disney World. Like, the idea, like, there's the idea that if he wins the title as a second option, folks are going to be like, well, that does it. And so could he, what's so frustrating to me is, I still think in any given series, he can turn up and play like one of those three best players in the world, but I don't think he can do it for 2 months, and the Lakers don't have the supporting cast. So I just think he wants to stay in LA. For me as a fan, the best thing that could happen for me is the Lakers stab him in the back. Be like, we don't want you anymore. You have to leave. But they're not going to do that. And so I just think the Lakers are, I mean, they're just fine. And it's a bummer. All right, next.
All right, so you had a very cool, calm, and collected response on TV with your co-host saying that Jason Tatum should win the MVP. I think you might have walked off, but so it kind of seems, kind of seems like you're trying to say that Jokic should be MVP without saying that he should be it. Like this.
No, right
this
now has, Jokic is the MVP.
He's the MVP
right now. Jokic is the MVP. I think Giannis is right on his heels. Turned. No,
this is wild.
With
you finally
with new
come
information,
around.
I can develop new opinions. A couple things. I was apoplectic at Kevin Wilds about the Tatum stuff because the entirety of his argument was the Celtics have the best record, Tatum's their best player. And that is just that is not what the league MVP is supposed to be. And now it very often is the league MVP is on the best team. I get that. But the idea that we have to, Wilds, who I adore, everybody knows how much I love Wilds, so I can say this. Wilds trying to turn almost any type of award or all-time ranking or GOAT discussion or MVP discussion or anything into some dumb man's version of QB wins is maddening. It's just, then why have any awards? Just wait until the year's over, and whoever wins the championship, that guy's the coach of the year, their GM's the GM of the year, their best player's the MVP, their first guy off the bench is the sixth man, their best rookie's rookie of the year. He doesn't want Wimby to win rookie of the year because the Spurs don't have enough wins. It's the rookie of the year award. He's like, well, the Chet's Thunder pretty good. I'm like, and so that's what made me walk off the set.
I love Wilds.
And
man,
I shouldn't talk about Wilds when he's not here to defend himself, but when he is around to defend himself, he doesn't do a good job on this. He's just like, goals to win. Like, no shit, man. I know that. That's why they give a team championship trophy. But that is not the league MVP. So that's what frustrated me. It's not that I'm naturally have an allergy to Jokic or to Tatum being league MVP. The reason Jason Tatum isn't the league MVP is because Jason Tatum's not the league MVP. The reason Tatum's not the league MVP is because nobody thinks he's more valuable or better than Jokic or Giannis. Nobody. Literally nobody.
It's probably just like the same type of thing that you have with height and quarterbacks. Probably just because those guys are bigger. Jason Tatum was like 3 or 4 inches taller. Maybe he'd be the MVP right now.
Are you saying if Jason Tatum were taller, he might be better? Or if Jason Tatum were taller and the exact same player, I would like him more? Which are you saying?
That one. The second one. You'd like him more if he were taller.
No, that is false.
He'd probably be calling the MVP right now.
Jason Tatum is LeBron's height. No, you can be that size. Steph is 6'3". Steph's your size.
Both the candidates you're saying should be over him are like 4 or 5 inches taller than him. So I'm just going off of that.
But they're better than him. They're also better than him. And also Shea has a better argument than Tatum. And Shea is way shorter than him.
Is his record better than the Celtics?
No.
I'm done.
You're going to drive me crazy. I'm done. It's not. It is not a. Again. Is there a minimum threshold of winning one's team must do to be in the MVP conversation? Absolutely. Well, Nick, you contradicted yourself. No, of course I didn't. Because in basketball, in a 5-on-5 sport where you play both ends, if you are truly an MVP candidate, your team's got to win, you know, obviously more than it loses, and actually has to win at a high, high level. That's why Luka, despite being 35-9-9, is not right now a serious candidate because the team's not good enough. Yes, there is a minimum level of winning one's team must do in order to demonstrate your value. But the idea that the pool of candidates must only be players on the team with the best record is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It just doesn't like the, and the, I didn't do a good job explaining. I got so angry I couldn't say it. But we're about to have the Oscars, right? The way some of these folks want to do league MVP, it would just be this: what's best picture? Okay, who was the best actor in that? That's the best actor. Who was the best supporting actor? That's your best supporting actor. Who's the best actress? That's that. It'd be like, well, no, but somebody acted better in a different movie that didn't win Best Picture. Oh, what's the goal? Is the goal to make the best movie possible? If that's the goal, then what are we talking about? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just dumb. And so, I want to be clear because this isn't just Wilds. And Wilds isn't here to defend himself. I am not calling Wilds dumb. Wilds is not dumb. Wilds' MVP argument is the argument a dumb person would make. That's just a coincidence. All right, let's move on. Oh, you know what's great about this? Hold on, let me say one other thing. What's great about this is, let me paint the picture of the first things first offices. So on the floor where we work, where the show is recorded, but where we do all our pre-show work, you come up the stairs and there's a long, thin hallway. And at the end of the hallway is a big conference room with a bank of TVs. In that conference room is where all the producers work, where Dusty is, who watches the show. And Dusty, every time the pod is on, turns it on and plays it volume up. Wilds' office is like halfway down the hall. And Wilds has only ever seen the podcast by accident. He's never watched it except for when he walks into the conference room and says something and it's on. So right now, at First Things First, what I think is happening is Wilds is likely kind of somewhat hearing his name a lot and probably somewhat curious what's being said, but doesn't want to actually engage. And the producers in the room, my guess, are stifling a little laughter as to not insult Wilds. Because again, I am not, Wilds is a very smart guy and the key to the show. And I'm incredibly grateful to work with him and for his friendship. And I'm not calling him dumb. He just makes a lot of the same arguments dumb people make. And they frustrate me because he's better than that. And so that's all. Okay. All right. Now let's move on. Go ahead.
All right. Well, speaking of Luka, he's having a really good season. Him and Kyrie are obviously gelling together. I guess not obviously because they've lost five of their last six games, and they're eighth in the West. So if the Mavs don't turn it around, do you think it's possible that Luka ends up calling it splits with the Mavericks?
Well, I mean, that's everyone's biggest concern, and that's why they made the Kyrie trade, was to be like, no, Luka, we're serious. But that's what I tell you guys, the day after they made the Kyrie trade, when Luka eventually leaves Dallas, this will be one of the primary reasons. Go ahead.
What would be one of the primary reasons? What would be one of the primary reasons?
Them trading for Kyrie.
Yeah, because I thought the way that you I remember you speaking of the Kyrie thing. It's just like, oh, we just got to sit and stand by until something else happens. But it's not. Do you think Kyrie is the problem here?
No, so that's a good point. Kyrie has been on great behavior and has conducted himself well. But this is one of the other reasons I was so against the trade. Even without Kyrie, even with him on his best behavior, they used all their last remaining assets to get somebody who is not at all what they need. If you have Luka, you don't need a point guard, your number one goal is not have another, scorer that needs the ball in his hands. So you make a good point. Kyrie hasn't done anything wrong, and Kyrie's having a great season, deserves credit for that. But it just doesn't fit. And what we've also know about Kyrie, and I'm not trying to take shots here, is he's never contributed to winning in any environment except for the 3 years he played with LeBron. Before LeBron got there, they didn't contribute to winning. With Brooklyn, he didn't. And here he's not. So I just thought, so even if, everything works out with Kyrie, which it has, the winning's not going to come. And I think Luka's going to want to win. So Luka has 2 years left on his contract, right? I'd start getting nervous. After this year, he has 2 years. If I were Dallas, I'd start getting nervous. Because now Luka's obviously got to own some of this and take some accountability for this. He needs to be better on the defensive side of the ball. All these things. But Luka is, by any metric, one of the, at worst, five best players in the league. In my opinion, he's the third best player in the league. And there's no reason for the team to be, for the second straight year, as mediocre as it's been. So, yeah, I'd be nervous if I were Dallas. All right, that finals preview they wanted to start the show with. We'll do that. Oh, go ahead. What were you about to say?
You were, so it seems like you were right about what's going on at the third floor back at the base.
Oh, Dusty? Dusty chimed in? Appreciate that, Dust. All right, finals preview next. What's right? With Factors, delicious, ready-to-eat meals you will be eating stress-free this spring. Each meal is chef-crafted, fresh, and dietitian-approved. More importantly, they are never frozen and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled up all day long. Try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, truffle butter, and shrimp. Restaurant-quality food that you do not have to prep, cook, or clean up, delivered right to your doorstep. And if you need to change your deliveries, you can pause or reschedule whenever you like. Factor is your solution for fast and premium meals. Also, for the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So, what are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/NickWright50 and use code NickWright50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NickWright50 at factormeals.com/NickWright50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next. Fuel up fast, eat better, and get back to what you love doing this spring with Factor. All right, welcome back in. What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 219. All right, DeMonze, let's get to what should be one of the best games of the NBA season tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the defending champs are playing the best team in the NBA as of now in the Celtics. And the Celtics are looking to bounce back after they blew a lead to Cleveland on Tuesday. Do you think this is a finals preview, or what are we watching? What are we watching for?
Well, listen, I mean, Vegas thinks it's a finals preview, and I think Denver is incredibly likely to end up in the finals on the western side of the bracket. By the way, I just thought of this because I was trying to think, is there a scenario where you could get to go to a finals game? So I'll just make this commitment here. If the either LA team makes it and Boston makes it, I'll get you some bad tickets to one of the games so you can go.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
The Clippers are your better bet to end up making the finals than the Lakers are.
What do you think I was talking?
Well, I mean, how else could we do it? How else can they be playing the Celtics? I was saying because you're a Celtics fan. You live in LA.
I'm just thinking like how the hell are the Clippers going to face up with the Nuggets, and how are the Lakers going to? We saw how that went last year.
No, right. Well, listen, I was thinking that too when I made this multi-$1,000 commitment out of nowhere. That is, I'm probably not going to have to come through on it. But I'm not saying I'll fly you to Denver. I mean, they're more likely to make it. But if it were to happen, I did this for, man, sometimes I get myself in trouble with this. And then I'll do the finals preview thing. I was very confident that the Knicks were totally cooked last year. Let me see what game it was. Hold on. I want to get this right. So we have on the TV show when I say diehard, I mean the most diehard sports fan I've ever met. I've ever met under any circumstances for any team.
Dude, that's huge.
We talk about him on the show sometimes. This kid's named Ramsey. He's a great producer. I shouldn't say kid, but I think he's your age. So he's a kid to me. And he, when I say loves the Knicks, I mean, I think, and he's such a nice guy, gets angry when like I snub one of the Knicks from the NBA medals. He used to sit next to me in the office. He still sometimes does. And I'd glance over and he's just watching like Obi Toppin highlights from when he was on the team. Like, I mean, a true diehard, like a legitimate, true diehard. And I thought the Knicks were cooked in, I don't even know what series.
Was it the playoff series last year?
It definitely was the playoffs. But I'm trying to remember. It doesn't really matter. Regardless, I said kind of flippantly that if the Knicks were in a position to where they had a big playoff home game, not like, you know, they're going to get swept or something, a big playoff home game, I was like, Ramsey, I'll buy you a ticket. And I was being dead serious, but I also did not think it was going to happen. And then the Knicks split the first two in Cleveland, and then they had a game three at the Garden. I think that's what it was. Whatever it is, I know the Knicks won. I know I bought the ticket, and I know Ramsey said it was the greatest sporting event he'd ever been to in his life. But that was awesome. An example. So I felt good about it. It was a cool thing. But also,
blame Jalen Brunson for that.
Yeah, exactly right. But it was also similar to this, which is when I said it, I didn't actually think that they were going to get there. And then they got there. So, hey, maybe the Celtics will win the East and one of the LA teams will be in the finals. We get to go to it. But now to the topic. Here's my concern about Boston. They suck at the end of close games.
Yeah.
And they have for a couple years. And this is also some of my trepidation about Tatum. Tom Haberstroh, who has a Substack, you got to pay for it, but it's like $60 for the year. If you're a big NBA fan, it's $5 a month. I think it's worth it. He did an article on Tatum yesterday that is galling as far as, okay, MVP candidates and their effective field goal percentage in the clutch this year. Shea, 62%. Again, effective field goal percentage, so it incorporates threes worth more than two, but just it's fine. Jokic, 61%. Giannis, 59%. Luka, 54%. Tatum, 38%. Okay, is that an outlier? Tatum's effective field goal percentage in the clutch 2 years ago, 38.5%. Last year, 38.3%. This year, 38%. Tatum, 3-point shooting in the clutch, 19%. So, and this is all the
shot selection's poor in those moments, I notice.
So that's exactly right. His shot selection is very poor, and this is where, and so just for the context here, of everyone in the league that's over the last 3 years taken at least 200 clutch shots. All right, there's only 11 or 12 guys, and here's who they are. Number one, shout out Daniel, Jokic. This is effective field goal percentage at 55%. Number two, Steph, 53%. Number three, DeRozan. Shout out DeMar, 52%. Number four, Fox, 51%. He just won Clutch Player of the Year. Number five, Embiid, 51%. Tied with LeBron at 51%. Number seven, Shea, 48%. Number eight, Durant, 47%. Nine, Trae Young, 46%. 10, DeJounte Murray, 45%. 11, Donovan Mitchell, 44%. 12, Tatum, 38%. So, there's 12 guys that have taken a lot of these shots. He's last by a lot. And you say shot selection, DeMonze, that is the problem. This is where the idolization of Kobe can bite you a bit.
Yeah.
So, two things on Kobe. One is, and this is going to end up being at least a partial compliment, Kobe took terrible shots. What made him special was he could make them. But even Kobe, who was as good of a bad shot maker as the league has ever seen, was not that efficient. Because nobody is super efficient on hard, tough shot. You know what I mean?
Right.
On tough shots.
Jumper, right.
So if we just take Kobe's peak, right? If we take from Kobe's basically 0-2 season through his last championship, even just that peak, Kobe was a 45% shooter. And 34% from three. For his career, he was around the same, actually. Just under 45% of the field and just under 33% from three. But he was taking impossible shots. Tatum is a really, really good player. And he's taking similarly impossible shots.
He's got a
shots.
Really good team as well.
Right. So that's the other thing. And the thing when you take contested jumpers, you never get to the line. You know, at the end of games. You're not. And so that's my concern for Boston is, I don't know they're going to blow everybody out. And if these games are close late, do you trust Jimmy Butler and the Heat more? I do. Do you trust Milwaukee more? Maybe now that they have Dame.
I still trust the defense in any situation, though. They have that going. Like, at the end of the day, I mean, Miami's defense isn't Boston's defense, but I get what you're saying. Like, when it comes to late in games, not making mistakes, taking the right shot.
But also, Boston is truly, they're not trying to make the finals. They're trying to win the title. And Denver, their late game execution is the best. Jokic gets them a good shot every time. It doesn't mean Jokic is taking it. And when they have, and the few times Denver has a bad possession, Jokic just throws up that horse over the head three and he banks it in. More than any guy I've ever seen in my life. I understand that that is a little confirmation bias, but sweet Jesus, man. That guy makes more buzzer really beater, deflating. Shot clock ending, just demoralizing nonsense shots. And so tonight will be interesting to watch, but I trust, gun to my head, Miami and Milwaukee out of the East more than Boston, despite Boston as home court, despite Boston, all these things. So we'll see. But yeah, tonight should be fun. I think Boston is going to sound unfair. I think Boston, it would be better for them to win a close game than to blow Denver out. I think if it's a nip and tuck game and Boston comes out of it, that's actually better than them blowing Denver out.
It's going to be more like that in the series.
Exactly right. All right, let's play write-ins.
All right, we're playing write-ins today. So we're going to talk a little bit of NFL before free agency. So, you know, on Tuesday we discussed Justin Fields. Oh, that's a new one. So on Tuesday we discussed Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. But there are plenty of other huge dominoes. So in today's write-ins, you're going to predict the future about these free agents. Okay. So first off,
yep,
we got Baker. Tampa remains the favorite for Baker, but Baker has been rumored to be in the solution for a few teams, including New England. Baker will sign with...
Listen, I think he's going to sign with Tampa. I think he's probably going to get 3 years, $100 million, thereabouts, with like $65 million guaranteed. But the New England thing is interesting. If I were New England... and I were trying to, unless I absolutely loved at least two of the quarterbacks, other than Caleb. Because the thing is, you don't know who's going to be there at three. You can say, oh, I love Jaden Daniels or I love Drake May. You don't, one of them, you don't know which one's going to be there. Now, if you love J.J. McCarthy, you watch different tape than I did, I shouldn't say tape. I'm not watching the All-22 college football. But you watch different Michigan games than I did. That's fine. He'll be there. If you love one of them, that's fine. But there is an argument to be made with the Giants seemingly wanting a quarterback. Minnesota's going to want a quarterback. There's going to be these teams that want to trade up. That if you're New England at three, and you can trade with the Giants at six, and get an extra first-round pick, and then at six you draft either Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze if you want the wide receiver, maybe Marvin Harrison Jr.'s there, almost assuredly not. He's probably going four to Arizona. Joe Alt, the franchise left tackle, or maybe if you're New England and you're like, you know what, we need a lot of stuff. Great. So we're going to go from three to six and get an extra first, and then we're going to go from six to 11 and get another extra first, and now we're really cooking to take best player available there and then sign Baker as a stopgap. That might be the best team-building move unless you adore multiple of these quarterbacks in the draft. But I think Baker's going to – I think Kirk Cousins is probably – we're doing that next. I think Baker's going to sign with Tampa for probably 3 years, $100 million. All right, next.
All right, you thought Atlanta was crazy for considering Kirk Cousins over Justin Fields. But someone is going to give this guy another huge contract, so it might even go back to – you might even sign with Washington. Where do you think the Cousins will go?
Well, I guess Washington theoretically could do the same thing I'm talking about the Patriots doing, which is trade the number two pick for an absolute bounty, sign Kirk, and go from there. I don't think that's going to happen. The Atlanta thing's interesting because evidently Cousins' wife is from that area. Her in-laws are there, and that's one of the reasons he might want to be there. He's such a family guy. So I didn't know that until yesterday. That's an interesting wrinkle. It seems from the people that know these things, it seems like everybody thinks Kirk's going to go to Atlanta and that Atlanta's going to draft a quarterback. And I'm sorry, that Minnesota's going to draft a quarterback. Pardon me. I said that wrong. That Kirk's going to go to Atlanta and Minnesota's going to draft a quarterback. That's not what I would do if I were Atlanta. I don't think you're close enough to try to, you know, sign a 36-year-old post-Achilles, but I think that's what's going to happen. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so there are reports that the Cowboys were considering Saquon Barkley, but their cap as it stands is already pretty high, or over the, they're over the cap.
Yep.
Saquon will sign with.
Well, I don't know where he's going to sign. I know the teams that... So, the Cowboys signing Saquon, in my opinion, would be silly. That is not their position of need, and the Cowboys this offseason should not... The Cowboys were the highest scoring team in the NFL last year. They were third highest the year before. They were the highest the year before that. They don't need a shiny toy in the, you know, what's going to be the most expensive running back in the league. Or, I'm sorry, in this free agency period, not the most expensive running back in the league. Also, it does warrant mentioning that the this is from... somebody posted, Taylor Dahl posted this on Twitter. The last 10 Super Bowl winners, their running backs have made the following: 870,000, 700,000, 1.8 million, 1.1 million, 1 million, 480,000, 760,000, 900,000. 770,000 and 420,000.
Saquon's big thing last year was getting paid.
Right. And he's going to get, I don't know what the market's going to be. I know that Saquon's going to get the most money of any of this running back market. So that, but that doesn't mean he's not a useful player when healthy. The team that, if I were them, I would say, you know what? I don't mind paying extra a little running back tax. I've got the money. I'm trying to really juice the window right now is the Houston Texans with your guys, with CJ. They need a running back. They have the money. They've spent draft picks on the wide receivers. Like, the Texans to me make sense. Another team that I would say, you know what? I don't mind spending the money. I've got it. And I'm going to have a young quarterback that I want to support. Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears. Draft Caleb. Yeah. Sign Saquon. Draft a wide receiver at 9, and now you're really, or maybe Brock Bowers if he's there, now you're really cooking. People have attached him to Dallas and Philly. Dallas and Philly need to address obvious defensive weaknesses with their cap dollars, not go sign an expensive running back. So I would say team with a quarterback on a rookie contract, or the other kind of interesting one, they don't have the money for it, but I could see him doing it, is, I almost said Michigan because of Harbaugh, but the Chargers. But they don't have the money. They could use him. They don't have the money. All right, next.
Fair. So we talked about Saquon, so let's talk about some other free agent running backs. We've got Derrick Henry, yeah. Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, Josh Jacobs, and if the reports are true, possibly Joe Mixon. Which free agent running back would you sign?
None of them.
None of them. No, I mean, we know the Chiefs don't need a running back.
No, I know, but I just wouldn't spend real money on veteran running backs unless they're Christian McCaffrey. I just wouldn't. It's just not. You can find them in the draft. Nick Chubb is amazing. The Browns, he went down. The Browns' running game was still great. The Ravens lost like 3 running backs. His running game is still great. The Pacheco was a 7th-round pick. Like, it's not just the Chiefs. So that's just not where I would spend my free agent dollars. All right, next.
All right, the Oscars are this Sunday. I'm not sure if you've had any time to watch any of the Best Picture nominees with all the time you've been spending studying dead cap rules. But if you have...
Again, I don't have to spend a lot of time studying. It's very simple, guys. It's just people choose to be ignorant about it. But go ahead.
If you have, the best movie of this year, in your opinion, was?
All right, so first of all, the Oscars going to 10 Best Picture nominations was a terrible decision. Terrible. Have it be 5. When it was 5,
you're about to get a little Nick
I made
it, right?
An effort to make sure I'd seen all 5. No, it's like, oh, okay, there's 5. That's digestible. It's 10 movies. Who can see 10 movies? Unemployed people, like what? People without kids. I guess people without kids can do it. I saw Seth Rogen. This might have been. Hold on.
People are killing him about.
That might be fake news.
No, I don't think it was fake news.
Was that a real quote or not?
Yeah, that was about him staying in, smoking weed on Saturdays with his girl or his wife. if they had kids, they wouldn't be able to do this, that whole thing. Yeah, I think that was a real
quote. I understand. Oh, yeah, and you also don't like people killing him for it because he's describing your dream. I get it. I understand. Just living in the Hollywood Hills, being rich, having no responsibilities, just hanging out. I understand it. I'm not killing him for it either. It's not just unemployed people, but people if you're going to be able to cram in 10 movies, you can't have kids and a job. You just can't. It's not possible. And I love movies. That sounds like a weird thing to say, but I love great movies. Love them.
Yeah.
Like, I was making an effort when Killers of the Flower Moon came out to go back and watch every Scorsese movie. I started that project, if you will, 4 months ago, whenever Killers of the Flower Moon came out. I've gotten through two. I watched Taxi Driver, and I watched Killers of the Flower Moon. That's
it. I'm confused, because I know about Taxi Driver, so I'm confused about what you're talking about. Like,
The director. Scorsese.
Oh, just his movies.
No, his movies. Yeah. So Scorsese.
Okay. Yeah, Taxi Driver's weird.
Has done some weird, bro.
It's really weird.
Uncomfortable.
Movie. Yeah.
And so he did, but DeMonte, he's done some of the greatest movies ever, and I've seen some of them. I mean, he did Goodfellas, he did The Departed, he did Raging Bull, he did Wolf of Wall Street, which I've seen.
Okay.
He did Killers of the Flower Moon.
You love that
movie. He's done, and I'm leaving out a million of great, great movies. I've seen some, but I wanted to see all of them. So the only Oscar movies I've seen is Oppenheimer, Barbie, and Killers of the Flower Moon. I didn't see Killers of the Flower Moon until the flight back from Japan. So I just saw it 3 days ago. That movie is phenomenal. And it's a true story, and it makes you sick about, it's another one of those pieces of American history that just sucks. But it is a phenomenal movie. Oppenheimer, I saw in the theaters and then watched again when it was on demand. But I like Nolan a lot.
He's the Peaky Blinders guy.
No, the main character for the movie, Cillian Murphy. Oh, Murphy,
yeah.
Peaky Blinders guy. Nolan's the guy who made it. Nolan made Inception, which DeMonte and I have all-time story about on.
Yeah, that
have we
movie.
Told it on the air?
I believe it's possible we've told it, or like maybe you told me for the first time. I just heard it, but. Yeah,
so,
I was.
Hold on. I got to see when Inception came out. I got to see, because if I haven't
told
this story,
I was like
12
or 13 years old.
All right. So you were 12, so I was 25. This is not. In my defense, I was the age DeMonte is now. Think about that. How crazy is that, man?
That's wild.
Isn't that wild to think about? I didn't, all right, I'll just tell the story. I don't care. DeMonte's 12. I'm 25. I'm, at this point, your mom and I have been together at this point for 2 years, maybe a year and a half. I'm not sure. We're not engaged yet. I don't know if we are, I think we had just started living together. But yeah, but it doesn't matter. If not, we were all together as a family all the time.
Right.
And I really wanted to see Inception. And this was back when I also still occasionally smoked weed. And DeMonte was with me. And I was like, man, I'm not going to get high and drive to the theater with DeMonte. What am I going to do? But I really want to see this movie, and everyone says, like, it messes with your brain. I used to smoke weed. So we go to the theater, go in, get our popcorn, whatever, sit down. I tell DeMonze, I got to go to the bathroom or something. The movie hasn't started yet. I go outside, hit a joint a couple times, come back in, watch Inception. My mind is blown. I loved it. DeMonze is visibly bored and annoyed. And we walk out of there, and I'm like, what'd you think? And he was like, that was one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen. Can't believe you took me to it. And I was like, I thought it was great, man.
Dude, and I thought that movie was so boring and confusing, man. Go ahead.
Well, you're 12 years old. Have you watched it again as an adult?
I haven't. I really think that's soured it for me, dude. I think that I still don't like it. And that was the last time I saw it.
but now you might like it more.
Right.
Well, whatever mind frame, but certainly now being able to understand it.
Yeah.
But I didn't tell DeMonze that until recently. That little piece of it. So
how did Which makes it make a lot more sense.
Oh, I was talking about Oppenheimer. But regardless, so I'm not qualified to give an answer to this question. Of those three, I think Killers of the Flower Moon was my favorite. I liked Barbie a lot. I thought Barbie was really well done and really smart. And I watched that with Deanna at the house. But I don't know. I'd like to see, people love Mastro, the Bradley Cooper movie. And there's a bunch of these movies people love, but 10's too much. I'm not going to be able to watch all 10. But if there were 5, I'd be able to watch it. All right, I'm kind of having a little regret about telling that story on the air. I'm not going to lie. Quick break, right back, What's Right. All right, I anticipated this pod being a fast one because I thought I was going to be exhausted. Instead, this pod's been outstanding and long, even by our standards. But let's get to some listener questions before I get to work. Go ahead, DeMonze.
All right. So there's some speculation that you made a burner to ask yourself this question. Curtis Matthews said, sure. Question for Nick. When it's all said and done for both athletes in their respective sport, who will be the bigger GOAT? Patrick Mahomes in the NFL or LeBron James in the NBA?
I think it's actually more likely to be Mahomes because I don't think there is what has worked against LeBron is vocal contingents that were against him shortly after he entered the league in the Kobe Bryant diehards and the Michael Jordan diehards. They identified him as a threat. He also had some public very public failure. And you know what I mean? And they were so entrenched. I don't think many people hate Mahomes. Yeah, you're starting to see some of it bubble up, some of it, but there's too many. Go ahead.
I noticed they're already doing it, but they're showing a bunch of clips of Brady getting the crap tackled out of him. They're saying Mahomes didn't have to play in this era. That's already started.
But. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, there'll be some of it, but the other thing that I think is going to I think Mahomes is going to catch Brady in the winning. I do. And the numbers are going to be the one of the things Jordan has, you know, Jordan, I understand LeBron caught him in all the numbers, but in the accolades, Jordan does have 5 MVPs, LeBron's 4. Brady, and I put this in quotes, only won 3 league MVPs. How many do you think Mahomes is going to end with? 5? What Peyton has? 5? You know what I mean? And so it's just, so there are, I think that, I also think there are fewer people who's, the other thing that works against Brady is Brady, unlike these other guys that we talk about as GOATs, whether it be LeBron, Michael, Kareem, Gretzky, you know, Babe Ruth is hard. This is 100 years ago. But all of those guys, no one debated during the first, you know, 10 years of their career, were they the best player currently playing? It's like, oh no, this is Jordan's league. This is LeBron's league. This is Kareem's league. Those things. Brady the Brady Manning and then Brady Rodgers thing was a real debate for the first 15 years of Brady's career. And then the last 7 years, Brady separated from everybody. So for all those reasons, I don't think Brady's going to have the stickiness of the GOAT stuff that that Jordan has had. So I think it's probably Mahomes. All right, next.
Ethan Williams, what do you recommend? What do you recommend doing / eating in Tokyo?
All right. Well, listen. Tokyo is a bigger city than New York City. So what to do is it's too much to list. If you're into history, travel around Japan and go see the different shrines and the different castles. The bullet train is unbelievable. Things that take a 6-hour drive are a less than 3-hour train ride. It's affordable. Their subway system and train system is immaculate. So that's the best way to move. As far as eating, here's what I will say about the food. Obviously, the sushi is what people are going to be excited about. The just average sushi in Japan that I ate, just like you don't have to go to like the best place in the just the regular sushi spot there is going to be better than any sushi place anywhere in America except for the very, very best sushi you can get in LA or New York. So like if you now sushi's a weird thing because at the very top of the top, everyone's getting the same fish. You know what I mean? And there's not a lot of preparation. So the very best sushi spots here in New York are on par, in my opinion, with the best spots that I ate at in Tokyo. They are. They're on par. But the difference is almost any other city in the country other than LA, their best sushi spot would be the worst place by far that I ate while I was over there.
Right.
But my favorite food stuff was the Kobe steak. I had Kobe steak in Kobe. But the Kobe steak also in Osaka or anywhere in Japan. It's expensive, but it's the best food I've ever had in my life. That now, listen, I eat some of that. Sometimes there's some places in New York you can get that. It's exorbitant. It's an absurd amount of money in New York to spend on food. In Tokyo, it's a little cheaper. It's still a lot of money spent on food, but that's what I like to spend my money on is good food. But Demonze, yeah. Did the Kobe steak at one of these places, they give you a certificate of authenticity for the cow that has both of the cow's parents, all four of his grandparents, and the cow's nose print, buddy. The cow's nose print on the piece of paper. And it's signed like
it's just like for this like, guy had a life, buddy.
because the what makes Kobe beef is the cows get massaged, they feed them beer, you know what I mean? It's a whole thing. And then they get slaughtered and you eat them.
The certificate.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Oh, the other thing is the ramen. Ramen is pretty phenomenal.
Talking.
Like
now we're
there you go.
I love it.
All right, let's go to Jelly Bean.
Mr. Kai Jelly Bean said, Nick, how was Japan? Anything you noticed culturally that was different from the U.S.? I went in October and I loved it.
Well, what everyone's going to say is that there's just no litter. It's just no litter. It's just not a thing. And there's
That's
also
really
what's crazy
cool.
is there's no trash cans on the street. They're not there. And so you might be like, why is there no litter? And the answer is, and this is what I realized.
People don't eat while they're walking and stuff?
No, right. You're not allowed. And in fact, in like the touristy areas where they're selling like street food, they have little enclaves where you have to eat it. Like even at like a little like kiosk, it's like you can buy food from here. You have to eat it right here. Because
yeah,
it's just not part of the culture is to walk. Right, it's just not part of the culture to eat while you're moving. A lot of the streets were no smoking, and so like there were just you would just go. But that's what everyone notices, and it is just different. But the thing that I noticed that I could not believe when I say to Monze, there is no jaywalking. I mean, there is no jaywalking. It is just the everyone
like even when there's
waits,
a clearance.
It
there's still
yes, like there you can be at a intersection. It can be a side street. There can be no cars anywhere. Everyone waits. And the light changes and everyone goes. It's just, so there are just certain things. It's just unique. And so I'm not those are the two things that jumped out to me more than anything was the just how different that was.
Yeah, I don't know
it's just
etiquette.
A real like a real yeah cult. It's just a real cultural difference, and yeah, it was stunning. And I know the no jaywalking thing sounds silly, but I mean there was at one point we'd been there like 5 days, and your mom and I had gotten a little turned around on Google Maps trying to walk to a subway station. And then I realized, I'm like, oh gosh, it's right there. Like I can see it. It's right there. But we were dead in the middle of like, it was probably a 3 minute walk in either direction to where the crosswalk would be. And the subway station's right across from me. And I said to your mom, I was like, are we going to do this? She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I have real guilt right now. Like, I feel like and I did it, of course, because I'm an ugly American, but I'm like, well, let's just go. Ran across the street. But it took me five days.
Did anybody side eye you? Did you catch any eyes?
No, I don't know. But regardless, my point is, it only took 5 days for me to actually, like, think twice about it. Now, not enough to, like, inconvenience myself to where I'm going to walk an extra 3 minutes. No.
Right.
But that was something to me. All right. Let's read William Jackson's and then we can move on.
William Jackson suggests, Nick, walk in the grass barefoot to get back to your sleep rhythm.
I got to look that up, William? If that's real. That feels really close to that very annoying thing people now say on the internet all the time, which is tell people to touch grass. And they're like, go touch grass. I don't know when that became a thing people said to people. But now everybody says it. I don't totally follow.
You don't totally follow?
I follow. I just don't know how it became like the go-to phrase.
Yeah, because everybody's in the house. But I do think that you should trust William Jackson. I think he's giving you good intel.
Okay. Sale Kayer sent a very nice comment. I appreciate that. And Magic Johnson asks, have I seen Dune 2 yet? I have not, but everyone that I've talked to that has seen it says it's great. I saw Dune 1 and I loved it. MSR asked my favorite sports memory with the Monze. That's too long. We can do that another day. I don't want to give that a short end of the stick. And we've talked about it a little before, but that'll take longer than the end of the show. So Monze, great job today. Today's show was awesome. Sure. Went a little longer than expected. And I really wonder when I'm going to crash, having been up since 1:30 in the morning. But I haven't yet. See you guys on First Things First today. Hope it's a good show. 3 o'clock. See you guys. What's Right? Hey, it's Nick Wright. Thank you so much for watching. Please do us a favor. Click subscribe. It helps my ego. And DeMonze's got a financial bonus writing on a number of YouTube subscribers. So help him out. And also, click the bell. I don't know what the bell does, but they tell me to tell you to click the bell. And your audio listeners, people that have commutes, drives, whatever it is, subscribe to the podcast as well, wherever you get the podcast. Same show, just in your ears instead of through your eyes. All that, check it out. Appreciate y'all.